Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ian McKenna, the moderator for today. There are always one or two bits of business beforehand. First of all, we would like to express our thanks to our partners, University of Lethbridge and the Lethbridge College. Lethbridge College are going to be involved today in uploading the stuff that's said and so on to put on the website, and we'll be working with them later. I'd like also to remind you that we resume on January the 10th, and speaker there is Dr. Saren Azer, and he is in the medical faculty of the University of Calgary. Bob Campbell is the moderator for that day, and it's the global challenge of the 21st century, our role as citizens. So that's for the 10th of January. Today, we have a couple here. There's the Gospel according to Harry Potter, but I've also heard it called more in line with a question. Harry Potter, a window into the soul of our generation? It's a question. So you'll perhaps have these answered. And it's by Terry Shillington and Matt Conley. I feel very uneasy with Matt here. I knew his parents before he was born, so I'm really, really getting old here. But Matt, among other things, before he leaves for Ottawa, in fact, to Parliament, is a grade 12 student at LCI. So, without further ado, I'm going to get out of here and ask Matt and Terry, in whatever order, to come and talk about Harry Potter.
All right, thank you. Just wanted to say thank you for having Terry and I here today. We're definitely honored to be here, and hopefully you'll enjoy what we have to say on the Gospel according to Harry Potter. So we're just going to start off just quickly here with what it is that we're talking about. You know, what is the Gospel according to Harry Potter? What are we dealing with here? And well, Harry Potter is a seven-book series written by British author J.K. Rowling. The book has sold over 400 million copies worldwide. And the brand itself of Harry Potter is estimated at $15 billion. $5 billion of that actually is worth just in the movies alone. Not to mention the books, memorabilia, those types of things that have come out. So clearly it's a big deal for today's day and age, and so we're going to be looking into what exactly it is. So just to kind of give a bit of a synopsis of what Harry Potter is all about, some of you may not know how the story goes or anything about it. The first time we meet Harry Potter is as a baby. His parents are both wizards. But they've just been killed by a dark wizard called Lord Voldemort, who seeks to plunge the world into chaos. And after killing Harry's parents, he proceeds to kill Harry. But for some strange reason, when he goes to touch Harry, his powers are immediately stripped of him, and he becomes an undead soul and is completely devoid of life. And Harry lives with a single scar on his forehead. And so, fortunately, Harry's rescued by the good witches and wizards, and is left to live with his aunt and uncle, the Dursleys. And the Dursleys are interesting characters because they're not witches and wizards, and they have a particular dislike for imagination or anything to do with the out of the ordinary, and they just don't like that type of thing. They're very, you know, proper people that live in the ordinary world. And they have a son named Dudley, and they show a particular effort to show favoritism to Dudley. For example, he gets two bedrooms, and Harry gets the closet under the stairs as a bedroom. But on his 11th birthday, everything changes for Harry. He has his first contact with the wizard world when he receives letters from Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry sent by owls. And this school, Hogwarts, is kind of based on the British style of education where the students actually live in the schools. And eventually, he's invited personally to the school by Hagrid the Giant, who just kind of shows up on his doorstep. And so this kind of frightens Harry a little bit, but he agrees to go along for the ride. And each book chronicles a year at Hogwarts. And there he uses magic to brew potions, and he learns all the different kind of arts. And he learns how to overcome magical, social, and emotional hurdles. And he has to struggle through his teenage years. And he sees Voldemort's rise to power. And also has to suffer through the incompetence and corruption of the government of magic that they have in place at that time. But Harry makes two very important friends. One is Ron Weasley, and he's kind of the stereotype sidekick. He's a comical character and is often used for comic relief in the books, and he's an immensely loyal character, and he doesn't quite possess the talents that Harry possesses. And so that's a key thing, because he often feels a bit forgotten in comparison to Harry. And then there's his other friend, Hermione, and Hermione's a prominent figure because she's very clever. She's very smart and good with logic, and as the books progress, she becomes close friends with Harry, and she uses her quick wits and encyclopedic knowledge to solve problems. And so after facing many obstacles and making countless friends, Harry Potter in the end goes on to defeat Voldemort, and you have your seven-book series. And so that's kind of a synopsis of what the Harry Potter story is in kind of a nutshell there. I mean, it's seven books. And so now Terry's going to talk about Terry's going to talk about the context that we have under Harry Potter. So, what we have here.
I'd be honored if I had half the skills of Harry. A further before we jump into the meat of the stuff, a further comment about why we're having this conversation, because. There have been writers over the generations that have defined a generation and spoken to a generation in a special way. I think of Lucy Maud Montgomery and the Anne of Avonlea series that made an impact on me as a kid, and Walt Disney entertained a whole generation of kids and to some extent probably described their reality. And who wrote Tom Sawyer?
Mark Twain.
Yeah, that's right. That's why this is a Mutt and Jeff show, and it's be clear when we're done who's Mutt and who's Jeff. Anyway, there have been writers that had that impact on a generation and described its experience. So I think J.K. Rowling fits into that category in a spectacular way. There's a reason why last year on the beach people of all ages were carrying around Harry Potter, you know, and reading it, and the reason why last Sunday a 10-year-old walks into church with his Potter book, one of the fat ones, I don't know which one, under his arm, because he doesn't want any downtime. She's a writer that's defined a generation, and as we jump into the themes, it pays us to pay attention to the reality she describes, because she has struck a chord with a whole constituency of youth that is hard to imagine in any other generation, and it certainly is different material than the other writers that I've remarked about. So back to where are we here? The major themes, and it's mine. I have the first one. So we want to name four major themes and some minor themes that are striking. And the first one is, when you read this from the outside, as a grandparent or a parent, it is striking the extent to which there's darkness in these stories. Incredible darkness. Matt referred to Lord Voldemort, the force of evil, who personifies it. He's sort of a satanic force, but he's not alone. There's a philosophy that goes with him around exploitation and misusing other people, and has a crew of workers called Death Eaters, and Lord Voldemort has a presence in the room personified by the snake, not by accident, it's a snake. And he has tremendous powers and followers, and you can't always tell who are the followers of the dark forces and who are the good people, and that's part of the scariness of it. The scariness creeps into the school and infects the staff. In the last book, Harry has... Harry has the scar that Matt referred to that gives him some premonition of where Lord Voldemort is and the emotions of Lord Voldemort. When Lord Voldemort gets angry, then the scar breaks open and burns. And so in some way, Harry's mind is connected to the darkness, and that scares Harry. So that's part of the ominousness of the plot. But I wanted to read to you a few lines in which Harry... has this battle with the snake. Harry bent and snatched it up, but now the room was full of the snake, its tail thrashing. Hermione was nowhere to be seen, and for a moment Harry thought the worst. But then there was a loud bang and a flash of red light, and the snake flew into the air, smacking Harry hard in the face as it went, coil after heavy coil, rising up to the ceiling. Harry raised his wand, but as he did so, his scar seared more painfully, more powerfully than it had done in years. "He's coming, Hermione, he's coming," meaning Voldemort. As he yelled, the snake fell, hissing wildly. Everything was chaos. It smashed shelves from the wall and splintered china everywhere. As Harry jumped over the bed and seized the dark shape he knew to be Hermione, she shrieked with pain as he pulled her back across the bed. The snake reared again, but Harry knew that worse than the snake was coming. It was perhaps already at the gate, meaning Voldemort again. His head was going to split open with the pain of the scar. The snake lunged as he took a running leap, dragging Hermione with him. As it struck, Hermione screamed Confrigio, and her spell flew around the room. And carries on, but you can sense in that the darkness of this story and the darkness that confronts Harry. And when you there's darkness in every writer from Lucy Maud Montgomery to Disney, but when you compare that darkness to Anne of Avonlea or Tom Sawyer or Mickey Mouse or Superman, the heroes of other generations, you know that the darkness is much more imposing and scary. And that's the first major theme we want to name. Second. And we're trying to watch our time here so we don't carry on too long.
All right, and then the next major theme that we're going to talk about is good and evil. And the struggle of good and evil is particularly important for Harry Potter, and it's particularly important for any story, really. But like Terry mentioned, you know, this isn't your kind of Bugs Bunny, Elmer Fudd type good and evil. It's really quite dark, and it's a bit more complex. And so I think that kind of reflects the generation that we have, that it takes a bit more to do it for the youth. And none of the characters can be considered absolute good or absolute evil. Everyone kind of has a bit of a past, and J.K. Rowling kind of reflects that. And sometimes by the actions of some of the characters, you can't always tell if they're working for you or against you. And it just kind of shows a kind of a varying collage of gray, basically, instead of your typical black and white. And one of the particular interesting things to point about Harry Potter is that J.K. Rowling is a British author. But what she did is that she incorporated a lot of elements of World War II Britain into the story. You have a lot of kind of the racism there with kind of the racial purity in some of the opinions of some of the people. You have a lot of the darkness of that there is a big evil out there. You don't know how long it's going to last. You don't know if you're going to make it through, but you just have a community there that's willing to resist and willing to continue on despite all the bad things that are going on. And no, it's very interesting as far as how she defines this good and evil and how much more complex it is. And so, Terry's going to elaborate on the next scene. Let's get this to work here. There you go.
So, it will interest us in this room, the attitude to politics and leadership in the novels, and it's quite striking in its own way, but there is a good deal of scorn towards politicians and leadership in the Rowling series. Of course, muggles, and that's the term, did you use that term, define it? But muggles is a term that refers to the people in this room. We're all muggles. We're non-wizards. Muggles never fully get it. They're always a bit confused, and muggle leadership is weak. They're kind of wandering around left field someplace. And the wizard leadership is dealt with, and sometimes they're a force for good, and sometimes they're bewildered about stuff and don't really get it. And in the last novel, the wizard leadership and their ministries become infected by Voldemort and the dark forces, and they're totally taken over by evil. Never in the book is politics taken very seriously or very helpful. It's not a very helpful force and not relevant. If you want to fix the world, then gather your friends together, as Harry does with Ron and Hermione, and tackle stuff and make evil right. But don't expect the politicians or the leaders to get it done, because they're probably bewildered and befuddled about the whole thing. And that may or may not strike you as the way youth and their parents feel about leadership today. But the next subject is, the more we thought about it and unpacked this stuff the other day in the on the Chesterfield, the more this next theme struck us as very thoughtful and profound about our generation and the culture in which our kids grow up.
All right, thank you. All right, so kind of here's kind of the fun theme. What we found is that there's two worlds in Harry Potter. You have, in the story of Harry Potter, you always start off in the regular world, where Harry is a regular, ordinary teenager living with the Muggles. And then you also have the magical world with witches, wizards, and all your magic. And J.K. Rowling has written kind of different transitions for how you can get into this magical world. In the first book, Harry Potter actually walks through a brick wall. He just kind of looks at it and walks straight into it, and he's in the magical world. Harry travels by broomstick. He can travel by magical car. And there's just all kinds of different ways to get into this magical world. But the key thing about the magical world is that Harry can do just about anything he wants. He can do anything he desires. He can, you know, perform magic, brew potions, partake in wizard activities. But what's also important to know is that Harry feels different in each of these two different worlds. Because in the ordinary world, he's very ordinary. He's a friendless teenager. He has glasses and untidy hair. He has a lightning bolt scar on his forehead. You know, he's a bit of a geek, you know. But in the magical world, he's special. He's someone that's really important. You know, his good qualities are acknowledged. He has many friends who accept him, and he's very good at performing the magic that he can perform. And so really, is it a mystery why Harry would feel more comfortable in this magical world? And of course, J.K. Rowling's made an effort to balance the magical world by providing the forces of evil, and you have your Lord Voldemort, and just the pressures of society. But what's nice is that Harry Potter can always leave the ordinary world and escape to this magical world. And this seems really important for the youth of today, because the youth face a lot of pressures. You know, there's the pressure to do well in school, there's the pressure to have friends, and maybe that significant other, and there's the pressure to have what's in. You know, you got to have the right shoes, the right clothes, the right iPod, the new computer, the new PlayStation. And then there's also the pressure to define yourself, to find out what it is that you believe and what it is that you stand for. And in many ways, these pressures parallel what Harry's feeling. But of course, the youth of today can't really just walk through the brick wall and end up in the magical world. There's got to be some other thing that they can do. And this is reflected by the use of different types of technology. You have your computers, your cell phones, your PlayStations, Xbox, the Wii. And you can find that in a lot of the games that are being played, that there's kind of a theme that keeps coming back. For example, you have the Madden NFL football series, where you can actually be the GM of your own team. You know, you can fire the coach, trade players, get draft picks, and actually beat a team that can beat the New England Patriots, which would be nice. And then you have your Age of Empires series, where you can actually pick a kingdom. You can be the medieval Britons, the Vikings, the Romans, and you can build a society, build a culture, expand your population, you know, maybe build a great wall or a great pyramid, and then eventually build a giant army that can take over the world, and then you're the king. Then you have another game called The Sims, and The Sims is actually the highest-selling computer game in history. It sold 60 million copies. Well, for those that actually sold, the others just pirated it, right? And this game is a virtual dollhouse, basically. And so the easiest way to describe it is that, remember when you were in high school that you knew that cute blonde that sat at the front row, but you never quite had the courage to ask her, that type of thing? Well, in this day and age, you can actually, using 3D technology, create this girl. You know, you can put her with the right length of hair, give her the right personality, decide all her attributes, you know, maybe figure out her physique a little bit, and you can stick her in the game. And then what you can do is that you can build yourself. But of course, when you build yourself, you know, you're going to make yourself 6'2", you know, give yourself some rock hard abs, bigger biceps, up your charisma, and then, you know, put yourself in the game alongside her. And then what you can do is you can do anything. You can invite all your friends and have a five-star party, or you can take her to a beach or to any place in the world, and you can just design your own world. And then the last game I'm going to tell you about here is a game called Tropico. And let's see if you can pick one of the subtleties in this one. In Tropico, you've just been elected el presidente of your own island in the Caribbean. You can actually move all of your country's budget surplus into your Swiss bank account. You can threaten the U.S. with nuclear missiles. You can invite the Pope to come and visit your island. You can build a whole series of secret police. And you can even build a small cigar factory and enjoy the comforts of life. But of course, this is all fictional. I mean, none of this ever actually happened in history. You know, it's completely fictional. And But the key relation here to all of these games and what relates back to the Harry Potter series is that you can be whatever it is that you want to be. I mean, you can be El Presidente. You can be the GM that made the team that beat the Patriots. You can be that king of the world. And that's what you're finding is a bit different from Harry Potter in comparison to, you know, the Tom Sawyers or Jim Hawkins and Treasure Island or Anne of Green Gables, is that they're in an ordinary setting, and even though they are the protagonist, they're kind of your average kids, right? With the case of Harry Potter, I mean, Harry's the guy. Harry is the be-all to end-all. He's the special one. He's the one that can do anything that he wants to do. He has all the friends. He has all the control. And that really resonates with the youth of today, as you can see with a lot of the games that are being played and a lot of the things that encourage being the center of the universe. And so that's kind of what we found. And what else that we found with Harry Potter is that, you know, it's very complex. The world has to be kind of alternate. The world has to be really different in order for it to kind of resonate and appeal to the youth, because it just takes that much more complexity and that much more than it did in the past. And now we're going to get to some of the kind of more minor themes that are found in Harry Potter. And so just if you want to think about that. First of all, we have the theme of love. Love's in Harry Potter. I mean, you have the case between a mother and son. You have the case between friends. And there's even kind of the high school romance kind of styles going on. And nothing graphic, just very, really innocent. And as far as love goes, Harry Potter teaches that love conquers all, but not all the time. Many times it doesn't quite do the job, but it's still an important factor in the world. And so Terry's going to get to the next minor theme.
Yes, a second minor theme is that of alternate wisdom. There's ordinary wisdom in the book, but there's repeatedly an alternative wisdom that is deeper and more profound, and that runs, wizards have a deeper grasp of these things. You know, the first book starts with Harry going to the train station and stepping onto station 9 3/4, which doesn't exist for the rest of the world, and he takes off for Hogwarts, and that's just a symbol of the deeper layer of wisdom and reality that some figure out and some don't.
All right, the next thing that you have is censorship. Harry Potter displays how the media can influence the opinions of others and what people think, and oftentimes the government and the media are perceived as corrupted bodies who don't tell the public everything that they know, keep a lot of things from the people. And even in Harry's life, there's a lot of censorship about the details on his past and when what's happened to him. And so J.K. Rowling kind of makes two comments in the same breath here. With the censorship, she kind of reflects on our society and how the media doesn't quite tell us everything that we need to know. And she also comments on how with age comes a better understanding and better knowledge, and the censorship's kind of taken back a bit. And then Terry has the next theme. Right here.
What you're looking at in this center picture there is the sorting hat. And when Harry goes to Hogwarts, when any student goes to Hogwarts, they are sorted out into one of four schools. I don't understand the British system, but I'm sure it relates to that school experience. So four different schools, and you don't get a choice as to which group you're in. The sorting hat places you, and that determines your whole, some parts of your whole future, because each school, each stream has a different ethic and ethos and strength and weakness, and you don't get a choice about it. You're sorted by the sorting hat. It's just an interesting minor theme again.
And then the next one I kind of touched on a bit earlier has to do with racism. In Harry Potter, you have your ordinary people, the Muggles. You have the witches and wizards. But you also have your variety of magical creatures like the trolls, goblins, elves, giants, dragons, that type of thing. And the reader occasionally encounters a bit of condescension from the humans towards these different creatures. And so you can kind of feel that most prominently in the seventh book. And it's just kind of a comment on how our society today isn't entirely free of looking at everything partially, and it's racism, unfortunately, is still a part of the world today.
There is, again, a minor theme, there is bullying that goes on in the book repeatedly, and one of them relates to the Dursley family you saw at the start, where Dudley Dursley, his cousin, is a is a kind of a mean-spirited guy that that bullies Harry when he can get away with it, and then that evolves over the seven books, and at the end Harry's wizarding powers are such that Dudley is the one who's intimidated. But that's a picture of Malfoy and Harry, and within the school of Hogwarts, there's bullying goes on as well, and one of Harry's classmates, Malfoy, is a bullying personality. So we never strictly lose the bullying theme.
And finally, you have the theme of courage and bravery. And this one is particularly important because Harry's often, in every book, called to take on the forces of evil and defeat Lord Voldemort, and every time he comes out ahead, but every time it's also important to note that he always looks at it and says, this time, I'm going to do it alone. I'm not going to involve my friends. It's too stressful on them. I'm going to do it by myself. And every time, Harry always gets into trouble and needs to be bailed out by his friends. And this kind of shows that Harry Potter talks about how there's strength in numbers and that, you know, it's important not to take on things alone, that you always need your friends and they're always there for you, and you can do things better with strength in numbers. And the next thing we're going to get into is what the critics have to say about Harry Potter. Harry Potter's come under a lot of fire for different controversies, and it's been praised for the things that it does well, so we're just going to talk about a few things that the critics have said. For example, a Yale professor and literary scholar, Harold Bloom, raised criticisms about the book, and he says that Rowling's mind is governed by cliches and dead metaphors and has no other style of writing. So Yale's not a fan. But then Stephen King said that it's a feat of which only a superior imagination is capable of, and declared that Rowling's puning one-eyebrow cocked sense of humor to be remarkable. And he predicts that Harry Potter will indeed stand the test of time and wind up with Alice, Huck, Frodo, and Dorothy as this series that is not just for this decade, but for the ages to come. And also, the church has also had vocal opinions on the Harry Potter series. And one of the more prominent ones is Pope Benedict XVI's chief exorcist. His name is Gabriel Amorth, and he is called the fictional wizard in training to be the king of darkness and evil. And he said that magic is always a turn to the devil, and it's a satanic art, and he's also compared Harry Potter to that of the dictators of Hitler and Stalin. And it's also important to note that he's performed over 50,000 exorcists as well. It's part of his resume. And then on the other hand, you have Pope Benedict XVI. And he's also quoted a lot with Harry Potter as well. He allegedly said that it is good to enlighten young people about Harry Potter because there are subtle seductions that are act unnoticed and will deeply distort Christianity at the soul before it can grow properly. And that's the first quote that's often associated with him, but it's followed up by the following. He actually goes on to say that he remains firmly convinced that Harry Potter novels are well written. They are written on the classical plots of good versus evil and in a standard of way that the old myths were written, and he can't see why there's a problem with children reading that. And he further goes on to say that if you're in doubt, read the book yourselves. The first one's the shortest one, and see what you think. And he says, don't rely on somebody else's opinion, not even my own. And so that's what the critics have had to say on the subject of Harry Potter.
So just to do a wrap and to refer you to your lunch, so we're seeing four major themes in this writing that might interest us if your grandparents and you're trying to figure out who your grandchildren are, if your parents wondering who your kids are, if you're a teacher or a preacher or something else and wondering what's in this generation, it pays us to pay attention, I think. But as we said, darkness that's huge and cosmic and often seems out of control is the first theme we mentioned. And secondly, the struggle between good and evil that goes on in lots of writing but is, again, so cosmic and all-consuming in the Harry Potter books. The role of politics and leadership interests us. And fourthly, the experience of living in two worlds, and that's attraction for our generation, and also sometimes the dilemma of trying to sort out which is real and which is not real. But and then the minor themes that we mentioned. So we invite you to have lunch and ponder these things in your hearts, and maybe we'll have some good discussion later. Thank you.